These are the recollections of Turner Ashby. Memories of the years when the oceans rose and the several states were separated asunder. Chapter 16. Now here I will beg your indulgence. I will attempt to sing. I have not sung in so many years, and the world hasn't been a better place for it, I have no doubt. And I imagine my voice will sound inordinately creaky, but not the song, no. So here are just three verses out of the dozens I collect over years. I got a drawer full of them somewheres, written down on worn slips of paper. They're once scribbled upon and stuffed in my back pocket. Here's the song of Fair Liza. Fair Liza, Fair Liza, where have you gone? Fair Liza, Fair Liza, I give you my song. Save our country torn by division and strife. Fair Liza, Fair Liza, you offered your life. Fair Liza, Fair Liza, my brother's name John. He lay in the cradle, then he was gone. Taken by traitors, taken by night. Fair Liza, Fair Liza, please shine your light. She watched from the highway, she watched from the ridge. Down by the creek, she caught them on the bridge. She had no army, all she had was her own. And Lord, she delivered that babe back home. Now around about the year 2034, maybe 2033, one began to hear Ma and Ma, Fair Liza. She was a do-gooder. She came and went, and nobody ever saw her. She was a ghost. She had no birthday. Tracking devices could not track her. She was from no certain county or seceded state. Her allegiances always were a little bit murky. Sometimes she was from North Carolina. Sometimes she was from way out in Oklahoma. Sometimes she shot a man. Often she saved an orphan. Sometimes a boy, sometimes a girl. She saved him more than once. She saved him many, many times. And always the tale was told in a tavern of a town you just passed through. And the tale was always told second, maybe third hand, by a dark, hungry figure wiping the crust of bread inside a bowl, just passing through. They'd finish their drink, they'd leave. Maybe it was raining. The orphan boy was in foster care, or perhaps in an institution. He was ignored and skinny. He was loved by someone, and maybe a grandmother, who could no longer care for him. He was being sent to Texas for the bounty. Fair Liza waited unseen, sometimes in a dark hall, sometimes in the dark gray woods. Sometimes she had a horse, sometimes she was driving a jeep. And she waited in the shadows, and she would not let them take that orphan boy. When they tried, when they came for that boy, there was usually two or three or four burly men with badges and tan coats. They drove a pickup truck because they believed a pickup truck would blend in, and they believed, like all men of North America, in the power of a pickup truck. They claimed quasi-authority, and they presented smudged suspect papers. The crying of a child would be heard, and they'd veer off into the dark of the night. And the pickup truck, bearing that orphan, would roll past the edge of town, round a curve. The headlights would disappear into a sullen mist. And that truck would never get to where it was going. Fair Liza lay in wait, and she smote them. Now, this is an interesting word here, the word smote. I like it. It's an enjoyable, but expressive word. The word has some weight to it, biblical weight. Have to wonder exactly what Fair Liza did. Weapon is never mentioned, no pistol, no knives, no magical powers to speak of. Never has there been found a contemporary first-person description of exactly what a smote was. But the abductors, they were laid low, oh so low. And next they appeared before their long horned bosses, confused, whipped, and fearful. The child, tired, thirsty for certain, hungry, would be discovered alongside a road. A road near a town, and not just any town, but a town where somehow he was wanted, remembered, grieved for. A town he didn't even know he had relations or friends or support. And they'd given up on him long, long ago. He would have a crumpled sheet of paper in his pocket explaining who he was and how he's being returned and who was to look after him. These notes were always named names. Very specific, which was spooky. How'd Fair Liza know? How'd Fair Liza know everybody's name and where they were and who was to do what? No one, no chosen family, ever turned down an orphan. Bad luck to look a gift orphan in the mouth. There would be rejoicing and prayers and very American oath taken to take better care, to work harder, to do better. These slight dents, these mild insults to the Texas Federation Indentured Acts and the stained federal acts that preceded them were silently cheered and acknowledged, but not out and out celebrated. Oh no, it was too early, much too early in the resistance for all that. I wish Fair Liza would come to Kentucky and save an orphan, Lady Astoria announced. Wouldn't that be wonderful? She would save a child from those horrible Texans and their work farms, and I would help her. Yes, I would. I would help Fair Liza steal away. Now I smiled at my little Astoria. I was her tutor. I'd been her tutor for 2 years, and I was proud. I tried to fill her head with the lost, or at least misplaced, histories and geography of the world, before the floods and before the divides. I'd played her the songs of Woody Guthrie, Lucinda Williams, and it felt like some of it had rubbed off. Now here, Astoria was as high-born in a new age of nouveau riche, backcountry peerage and privilege as a child could be. But I saw her watching people, regular people. And if you do watch enough regular people enough times, I do believe one will realize people are people, just all the same. Besides, who can possibly resist Robin Hood or his 21st century incarnation? Yes, I have been in Kentucky for more than 2.5 years. But still, it was not my home. It was not familiar. And so I would think I'd seen familiar faces. I'd seen my mother, a cousin from Gainesboro. But most often, I think I'd seen Lady Fitzgerald on the side of the road, her profile on the window of a carriage. It was just a moment that clopped by. What she would have been doing in a carriage on the side of the road near Lexington, Kentucky, was a mystery indeed. And that is why I was surprised to see her. I was going in the opposite direction. I had to slow down and turn around, and that carriage was gone. It was summer. I often thought about ladies in the summer, almost as much as I did in the winter. You need to get yourself a little baronet and get married, Lady Jane, my friend Claire, said. Stop thinking so much, Turner. You saved up some money. Go over to Sterling Bowan, buy yourself a title. You may as well. We're never getting out of Kentucky. Why would you want to leave? Was always Lady Astoria's rejoinder when she overheard something, and she overheard everything. About 2-3 months later, Lady Astoria excitedly reported the latest news. Little Wee Jimmy is home. It's a miracle, it's a miracle, and it must have been Fair Liza brought him home. She jumped up and down. I have never met this third cousin of mine. I never met him, so we must hasten on down to Somerset and celebrate with my daddy's cousin family. And so it was the Earl of Somerset, often referred to as Big Wheel Jimmy by the locals, him being not that far removed from the used cars that he had once sold. He had once had a son who who'd been offered and taken for federal tax indenture and sent to the rice fields of Texas. After that, Big Wheel Jimmy's fortunes had swung round, and he procured himself a fiefdom and a title, and a wife with a title, bringing along a clutch of relations, like beads on a string, and all of them had tiny titles, and those titles were all verified through Sterling Bowen's own titleverification.com website. Now, Big Wheel had a nice little castle down there at Somerset, but he had no direct heirs. Broke his heart, as it always has for those who believe that their specific chromosomes, their special concoction of DNA, has to be godsend to the gene pool of the human race, or at least to the county. And Little Wheel Jimmy, he was to make a big splash in the gene pool, because when he arrived back in Kentucky, he was bigger than Big Wheel. He was all grown up, taller and tan, with muscles and grace of a field hound. He was a big teenager. It was about right time and birth date wise. He had been gone 10-12 years. It must have been Fair Liza. Who else could have brought him back to the fold? Lady Astoria concluded. The thing was, we'd hear about any number of miracles all occurring across the land, occurring concurrently, same day, thwarted abduction in Santa Fe, another one Denver, returned toddler in Athens, Georgia, within hours of each other, same description. A wronged, innocent soul found her way across a disputed boundary of bottomless sinkholes and heavily guarded outpost to return to her own. It made for great news copy, and encouraged the riffraff who had yet to receive their titles that someday they would get their due. But mostly, the multiple miracles of Fair Liza made it hard to believe for a sane man like myself, a rational man of science, that one person was responsible for all those savings of souls. Made you think. Maybe Fair Liza was a franchisor, akin to Santa Claus, or maybe she was an imaginary friend. America's full of imaginary friends, always has been. Of course, the longer it went that nobody saw Fair Liza, the more they wanted to meet her. The more they wanted to be rescued by her, and the more they wanted to rescue her for themselves. It wasn't that way at first, because she represented no particular political party, or at least none claimed her. But she would become the saint of reunification. Now, there's a last verse of the song I should sing. This last verse would have been preceded by an electric guitar solo, maybe a slide, oh, that I would have seen Duane Allman perform. And oh, I did love my electric guitar solos, and it was so sad when a number of nations led by the Mission of Utah banned the electric guitar as an instrument of the counter-revolution, whatever that meant. So here I sing. Well, this tale leads from the hills to the sea. Oh, Fair Liza, Fair Liza, won't you marry me? Fair Liza, someday we'll be free. Oh, Fair Liza, won't you marry me? They said they captured Fair Liza about 20 miles south of city gates. A party led by Sterling Bowen and Earl Lexington himself was gathered up to go investigate. They said she was holed up in a cave up in the hills. They said there was no way out. They said that she would not come quietly. They didn't understand this. They simply wanted to clear up a few facts and ask a few questions. They took me along because they said Fair Liza was a Virginian, and they might need somebody to translate. I grabbed Ed and I said, Ed, you got to come along. And he brought along a throwing knife and an axe. We were all going to get a look at this Fair Liza. More to come. Turner Ashby.